I'm Don.
And I'm Kate.
And welcome to Because Reasons,
a multimedia redemption podcast
where we take your beloved guilty pleasures in movies, books, and more
and decide whether or not
they're worthless trash. Hey everyone, and welcome to Because Reasons. I'm Don.
And I'm Kate.
And we're going to be here on a pretty regular basis talking about your guilty pleasures and movies and books and all sorts of entertainment that your friends hate, that critics hate, that the world hates, but that you just absolutely love. And what we'd like you to do, email us why you love your guilty pleasure thing. Say you just think Britney Spears should have won an Oscar for Crossroads. And you think that she got robbed, email us. Tell us those reasons. We want to know, because we want to give your thing, your guilty pleasure, a fresh perspective, fresh eyes, fresh ears, and a chance at redemption. Or maybe make a little bit of recommendation for where you went wrong and get you on the straight and narrow down a new path there. Because Kate and I both love us some guilty pleasures, but at some point we got to admit when something's just a stinker.
Speaking of stinkers, we have a glorious movie to share with you all today.
So Kate and I decided to indulge in a little movie you may have heard of called The Interview. The movie came out this past December. It stars James Franco and Seth Rogen as a couple of bumbling interviewers on a sort of late-night political satire show a la The Daily Show or The Colbert Report, though to put this particular show in the same breath as The Colbert Report.
It's loosely related.
Or The Daily Show. May The Colbert Report rest in peace. It is no longer with us. These two bumbling reporters, these two late-night reporters, get the chance to meet Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. The CIA swoops in and says, hey guys, can you do us a solid? Can you do us a favor? We've got this strip of poison trident gum, and we would like you to please Mac Daddy that all over Kim Jong-un and get that guy, eliminated or inhumed, as Terry Pratchett likes to say in his novels. There was a ton of controversy around this movie.
Tons. Anyone who hasn't heard of this movie, you've heard of the controversy. Even if you have no idea what on earth people are talking about when they talk about The Interview, you've heard all of the debates going back and forth, and oh no, it was pulled out of theaters, oh wait, no, some of them are putting it back. Even the president made a comment in relation to this movie.
A lot of people were talking about it because North Korean government didn't want it released. They said that Sony shouldn't release this movie because it was, you know, defaming the great moral character of their supreme leader and all of that good business. They actually went so far as the government of North Korea, I guess, authorized a hack of Sony Pictures. Sony Pictures Entertainment computers got hacked, released all this information, and it actually caused quite an uproar because a lot of folks, like Social Security numbers, were released. I know Charlize Theron is actually pretty happy, though, that the hack happened, because turns out she made $10 million less than Chris Hemsworth for the movie Snow White and the Huntsman.
Really?
Yes.
She was much more exciting to watch in that film.
I mean, because Charlize Theron.
Yes.
But it turns out they paid Chris Hemsworth $10 million more than her, and it was written into her contract that she was supposed to get as much as the lead star, because, you know, she's Charlize Theron. And so she, like, called up Sony and was like, hey, y'all owe me $10 million. And they paid it.
I would really love to be able to call up Sony and tell them that.
You owe me $10 million. Your crappy TV broke on me. You owe me money, Sony. But back to The Interview. So, you know, we heard a lot about this movie, a lot of controversy, but a lot of folks saying, you know, that the controversy may have been sort of drummed up by Sony, saying that it may not have been real, you know, because they first pulled it out of theaters and then conveniently decided to bravely put it back in some theaters, even amidst the empty threats of the alleged North Korean hackers and all of that business.
And all of this issue put together with Sony and the different commentary going back and forth by everyone, has kind of polarized everyone in terms of this movie. People seem to either really like it and think, wow, this is such a stand for freedom of speech. They were making such an important statement. And then you have other people going, why are we watching and giving media attention to such a stupid movie? These are two stupid actors who've done nothing important. Why should we listen to what they have to say? And clearly a media plug. And
right.
So, you know, going into it, there's kind of that question of, is this...
Right, would we even have watched it had the controversy not happened?
Yes.
So, I know Kate and I, you know, like I said, we love ourselves some guilty pleasures.
We really do.
Really. I mean, I think together our movie collection is fairly comprehensive. I wouldn't even say extensive. I think it's fairly comprehensive of bad cinema.
Yes.
But so bad it's good cinema. Which is one of the reasons why we wanted to do this show. Because we are lovers of cheese. All flavors of cheese. So we went into this movie. Of course, we read the reviews. We wanted to see what the reasons were why this movie might have redeeming value. And I was actually really kind of surprised that it got, you know, slightly better than average reviews. It holds a 52% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It holds a 55% viewer rating. An IMDb rating of, like, 7.8.
Which is shocking.
I mean,
if
like...
If you know nothing about this film and you just think, okay, it's James Franco and Seth Rogen... It is shocking to think that it would get that high of a score, having not seen it, just based on who it is and what it's written about.
So if you go into this, and we you know, the format of the show is we'd like to start off with some of the reasons why folks think that this is a great movie. And, you know, you go to look at Rotten Tomatoes, and some of these very positive reviews talk about how it is a great example of satire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a great sense of, you know, a lot of people brought up the freedom of speech, that we should be watching this because they don't want us to watch it, which, to be perfectly honest, I think is a terrible reason to do anything, to simply for the fact that somebody else doesn't want you to do it.
Well,
so
it's
you
a very
do
juvenile
it.
Response,
it
yes.
It is a very juvenile response. You know, a lot of folks are saying, you know, there's some intelligence to the humor here. There's a smartness, a smart cynicism to it. Some people praise the cinematography of it. So we went into this expecting, you know, to walk away with it with some mixed feelings. But I gotta say, we just watched the movie and went straight to a microphone. And I have to say, my first impression of the movie is I'm surprised at how good I thought it actually was.
I have to agree. I went into this movie, and you know, we try to go in as unbiased as we can. But with all the controversy and...
But I just knew this was going
to
suck.
We just expected this to be the worst 2 hours we would sit through.
I will say, God, that was a long 2 hours,
It was
though.
A long 2 hours.
It got to be a long 2 hours.
But surprisingly... It was a lot better than I would have expected.
It was a lot better than I would have expected. It was actually directed by Seth Rogen and a guy named Evan Goldberg. So Seth Rogen directed the movie, which I guess probably bodes well for him in the movie because he's probably one of the better moments in the movie. Pretty much anything that Seth Rogen does is quite well done in this movie, which is a sentence I never thought that I would ever say, ever. Because I put Seth Rogen into that category of, like, Will Ferrell, that just does stupid humor.
Where they can act, but choose not to.
Yes, they can act, but choose not to. I think that I like, I don't know, maybe 3 Will Ferrell movies. I like Elf because you have to.
Oh, you like, Stranger Than Fiction?
I love Stranger Than Fiction.
Stranger
it's
Than
so
Fiction.
Good. It proves that Will Ferrell actually can act.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean Emma Thompson.
Well,
I mean
of
Emma Thompson. And Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby. I like that.
I can't judge you. I kind of do too.
See, what did I tell you?
We are both
love
sitting
that
in
movie.
Shame.
So Seth Rogen actually directed the movie. He also produced the movie, and it was written by a guy named Dan Sterling, who has written for The Office. He's written for The Daily Show, actually, but he also wrote for King of the Hill and South Park. So, you know, sort of a mixed bag of wins and misses here.
Well, especially when you compare work on things like King of the Hill and South Park to The Daily Show, The Office, and having written on Girls.
Though, to be fair, South Park has some very brilliant satire.
They do.
I mean, the guys behind South Park did Book of Mormon, which is one of the greatest Broadway musicals of all time. Loved it. But this is actually his first screenplay, his first film.
Oh, okay.
So, well, you know, Wikipedia. Okay, so let's go with some of the easier stuff first. Cinematography. Some folks said that it was very well shot.
Cinematography, beautiful. Great scenery.
Yes.
Very well shot. The camera work is nice. The use of slow-mo, while a little uncomfortable when showing Kim Jong-un's death.
Oh, spoiler alert. Whoa.
Sorry. You're listening to a podcast.
I'm going to edit that out. I'm going to edit this part out.
No. You're listening to a podcast reviewing a movie. You know there's going to be spoilers.
Okay, but I will say, I mean, within the first, I got to say that first 30 seconds of the movie was not only...
The opening is wonderful.
Not only knee-slappingly hilarious, but it was beautifully shot.
The use of colors.
I mean, I have to say, I was really expecting this. The budget for this movie was about $41 million, according to Wikipedia. The source of all knowledge. Which, I mean, I have to say, is sort of like a middling budget for a comedy movie these days. You get about $20 to $40 million, which sounds like a lot of money, but it's about the average budget for a comedy these days. So I wasn't expecting, you know, grand cinematography. I wasn't expecting grand, expansive scenes, but they did some work on this. I mean, it's actually a very well-shot movie.
Well, and it's lovely to look at. If you're just going in to enjoy scenery, it's beautiful.
Yeah, the setting, the sets, the costumes. I mean, it really is a well-executed film.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the way it looks, the aesthetics of it, you know, the feel of the film. Yeah, it was a really well-done thing. Let's talk main characters here.
All right.
Seth Rogen as the bumbling producer, the well-meaning producer.
Seth Rogen, I thought, did incredibly well.
He did good work in this
movie.
Most
of his comedy in this movie is understated. He's more of the straight man.
Yeah, he plays the straight man to sort of the slapstick of Franco.
His character is, you know, well-written. He's very relatable and understandable. You know, this is a man who went to get his degree in journalism so he could be a serious, you know, reporter.
He wanted to bring hard-hitting news, you
and,
know.
You know, he's been sort of niched away into this entertainment sort of market. He's starting
I mean, they
to
do talk
that.
About Miley Cyrus's camel toe, so.
Yeah. But he's relatable in terms of a guy who, you know, thought he'd be doing something more important with
exactly.
his life.
Exactly. And he plays that part well.
It's very well played.
Yeah, and, you know, any of the finer moments, any of the more poignant moments in the movie, whenever there might actually be something to be said, there might actually be points of satire, are brought about by Rogan's character.
Yes.
You know, he is sort of the impetus for making sure that, you know, certain questions got asked. He's the impetus to make sure that you know, the broadcast got sent out to the country, and he, you know, is really the cause of a lot of the heart of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of, if there is a message of the movie, he's the one that helps deliver it.
Exactly.
Franco's character, on the other hand, plays possibly the dumbest human being on the face of the planet.
Well, and what's really insulting is I've seen James Franco be good in things. Put out a good performance.
I would like
to
discuss James Franco being good in cinema for just a moment, because here's the thing. People talk about, oh, well, James Franco can act. I've seen him act. And then I say, really, what movie? And they're like, well, it must be true because they give him more work. I mean, it must be true. I mean, it must be. It's like nobody can think of something that Franco was actually good in.
But see, that's because
they just assume
so
it must be
happens.
True. It's like children and Santa Claus, who is very real, by the way. Children that are definitely listening to this show.
Definitely
listening to this show.
Audience.
Big children audience. We're big with the 8 to 14 set. but I mean, it's sort of like, okay, well, I went to bed and I woke up, and there were presents. So it makes more sense that a fat man came down my chimney and delivered them.
Well, obviously.
I mean, obviously. So, I mean, it's like, well, James Franco keeps getting work, and people say that he's this, like, brilliant artist. So
it
must be true.
Oh, no, I wouldn't use the words brilliant artist. I said I've seen him be good in things.
Have you seen his book of poetry?
No. I've seen it. I read a little and had to put it down and weep.
It's the worst. It's the worst poetry. It shouldn't be called poetry.
But no, speaking of James Franco and poetry.
It should be called Franco-etry.
Oh.
That's... You're welcome.
All right.
Comedy gold here, folks.
To be fair, I had that coming. I've been subjecting him to tea puns all evening.
We've been drinking tea.
And punning.
We're very, very exciting people that way.
We're punnacious.
Oh, God.
Okay, I'm done with the puns. But no, in the movie Howl, where he plays Ginsberg, it's very well done. He's understated. He does serious. I mean, that was a very enjoyable movie to see him in. And so you think, okay, I saw him in something. He was good. What happened here? Was it the acting itself? Was it he just getting terrible direction? But every moment he's on screen, it's just sucking the enjoyment and comedy out of every scene.
I mean, it's like Franco and Rogan decided, okay, we're going to be like an old classic comedy duo. One of us is going to be the straight man, and the other is just going to be, you know, the guy that gets all the laughs. He's the guy that gets the joke line. But the problem is they took it to a stupid place. Like, it's not a dull place or a dim place or somebody that kind of bumbles along and is funny in his comedic bumbling. Like, I can appreciate, you know, satirical, I don't know, stupidity almost, but this was just straight up stupid. Like,
and just uncomfortable, unpleasant.
Oh, it got so uncomfortable. There were so many moments when I was like, I mean, there about halfway through the movie, which, God, it becomes a long movie.
Oh, we paused it and thought, oh, it's nearing the end.
There's an hour left. There are 52 minutes left in this movie. And we thought, oh, this is about to wrap up. But about that time, about halfway through the movie, I looked over at Kate and I said, I think if you just fast forward through all of the Franco parts, it's a pretty decent movie.
And you still get most of the gist.
I mean, I don't even know that he was necessary, except for his character is the reason why you get to go to North Korea. He plays the host of this late night infotainment show. And he supposedly is, you know, Kim Jong-un's favorite person in the whole wide world. It's sort of art imitating life in that Kim Jong-un had that big man crush on Dennis Rodman, last year or so, and invited him over, and they apparently went all palling around. Which, I have to say, led to one of the best moments of the movie.
It really does.
It's sweet, it's endearing. Franco doesn't actually speak the entire time, which probably helped. But it's a moment where they finally meet Kim Jong-un, and Franco's character of Dave gets to spend the day with Kim Jong-un, and they go around in this tank.
Singing Katy Perry.
Talking about their dead puppies. It's legitimately funny.
There are some really good chuckles in the movie.
Okay, so other characters in the movie. Lizzie Kaplan of Mean Girls fame. She's also in, what is that? The sex show on HBO or Showtime or whatever that is.
Oh, that one.
Oh, the one.
It's like saying she's in Fat Guy's
Skinny
Wife.
No, about Kinsey. The Kinsey thing. Oh, the sex. The meaning of sex or something.
No idea.
Let's say the word sex a few more times. But Lizzie Kaplan of Mean Girls fame. She was also in a season of True Blood.
Funny as always.
Wonderful. Not in it enough for me.
Very true.
I think she was kind of in it for quite a bit. She plays a CIA operative.
And as you're watching it, in every scene that she's interacting with Franco, it looks like she just wants to hurt him so badly because...
She's also in less and less clothing as the movie goes on, which I don't really know why they did that. She starts
because
off in,
reasons?
Like, full CIA. But I don't really know why they felt the need to continually undress Lizzie Kaplan, other than the fact that she's a beautiful woman, and...
Like Hollywood needs more of a reason than
I
that.
Guess, sure.
But she's good, underutilized, but good.
Underutilized, but good. Really, there's only two other people that you get to know. Everybody else is an extra.
Yes.
I guess they didn't have the budget for actors in this movie. Like, it's literally five people and about 700 extras.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the next character would be the...
The propaganda lady.
The propaganda woman who
She's
under
the
Kim
chief
Jong-un.
Propagandist for North Korea. And it's
is
a woman
supposed to be sort of the liaison between the North Korean culture and Seth Rogen and James
yeah.
Franco, helping them come up with the questions they're allowed to ask.
And she starts
Kim
off
Jong-un.
Being this very austere woman, very well played by...
Great boots.
Great hair.
Oh, I loved the hair.
Man... She's doing this. She's giving us full Snooki.
She's worth seeing. Just see the movie for her.
Her name's a wonderful actress, Diana Bong. I don't know how to say her last
name.
But
did a wonderful job.
Did a wonderful job. Little like 5 foot nothing Spitfire. She was amazing.
She was incredible.
She starts off
was
being
really
this
funny.
Really,
she was really funny.
Truly funny. You know, gives the straight face and just can deliver that dry wit mm-hmm. like nobody's business. Truly probably worth the price of admission to see mm-hmm. her. I would love to see her in more things.
Exactly. She did wonderfully.
She starts off as this sort of very dry, austere person. You think that she's completely loyal to Kim Jong-un. Spoiler alert, there's a plot twist. She secretly hates Kim Jong-un.
As you do.
Which, you know, who doesn't? Kim Jong-un, if you're listening to this, we love you. Like, don't bomb us, please. Don't hack my computer.
I feel like this is the same speech you give Disney before you criticize them of, we love you, don't hurt us.
That's why nobody can say the word Scientology in media. No. Oh god, we just did.
We're sorry.
And then, of course, the eponymous Kim Jong-un himself, played by Randall Park.
Fantastic job,
man. Oh my god, give this man all of the comedy awards, please.
He was
good.
Funny. He was really funny. He made... Listening to Kim Jong-un in the movie, just
baby,
starting to sing Katy Perry and ask if margaritas, drinking margaritas makes
make
him
you
gay.
Oh my god, gay margaritas. I would like to have a gay margarita with Randall Park's Kim Jong-un. They somehow...
They made this...
Horrible North Korean dictator. Somebody who puts people in concentration camps and...
Starves his country.
Pretends that he doesn't poop. Turned him into this adorable, endearing, sweet little man. Now, it was all farce.
Of course. And that, you know, at the turning point of the movie, as Franco's character realizes, hey, this isn't a great guy. He's actually... planning on killing people just to prove that he's tough, he still even gets across the crazy power mad dictator part really well. It's a very well acted role. Park was funny. He was endearing in most of his scenes.
In both positive and negative reviews, Park and Diana and Randall both are given pretty universal accolades for their roles.
Rightfully
in this movie.
So. Excellent roles.
Absolutely. You know, to be perfectly honest, I think you could take James Franco out of this. I would have loved to seen Chris Pratt in this role. I mean, I get that Rogan and Franco have like this bromance and, you know, rock on guys, what you do in the privacy of your own home is your business. But to keep parading it in public is just making bad movies. It's just making bad movies. I think if this were cast a little better, I think I could have seen, like, a Chris Pratt in the James Franco role.
Well, the problem with James Franco's role is that he just...
He played it stupid instead of silly.
Yes, the writing... I mean, some of the lines they gave him were... You just couldn't salvage that, no matter who you are. But he just, the way he played it.
And it's not
was
that the
so
directing wasn't there.
Done.
Yeah, it's not that the directing wasn't there because they made Kim Jong-un adorable. Mm-hmm. And it's not that the script writing wasn't there because there was some meat to the storyline. I mean,
exactly.
There was legitimate meat to it. I mean.
But just the way he. Even.
Something
the scene
about
where he,
Franco just made me want to find the nearest chipper shredder and just throw him in it. I just wanted him out of the movie immediately. I wanted Kim Jong-un to get pissed at Franco and take him out. They took out everybody else.
True.
there were so many shocking moments when so many people's heads were blown off. I was just taken aback, and I had to clutch my pearls. There was a lot of pearl clutching in this movie.
So, characters aside, what are your thoughts on the merits of the plot?
Okay, so it, I was afraid that this was going to sort of be like a Team America World Police thing. When they just sort of tried to stretch the plot and do too many things with it. You know, almost like, I don't know, if they turned Family Guy into a movie. Oh, you know what? I could almost compare it to like the Simpsons movie.
Okay.
Where it was sort of like five episodes of the Simpsons just into one thing. I thought that they were going to go there with it, you know, judging by... honestly, judging by the trailers for it and just reading some of the reviews...
Well, the trailers are just...
They do no justice to the movie.
They do no justice to the actual... There is
They spend all of the... I mean, all of the trailers that I've ever seen spend time in, like, the first 20 minutes of the movie and completely ignore the rest of it. I was expecting a lot of cutscenes, a lot of silly, ridiculous stuff. I wasn't expecting a plot. And there was a plot. I mean, and by the very end of it, well, about 3/4 of the way through it, there was a legitimate concern for the people of North Korea and the people that live under any dictator, the people that live under any kind of tyranny or repression. And there was some heart to it. And then they chased a helicopter with a tank and blew up Kim Jong-un with... Katy Perry singing softly in the background. So
no, I'm really glad that you touched on this because there's a good amount of plot. You know, they're developing the story very well of these guys, you know, trying to go into legitimate reporting. You know, their hesitancy at, you know, going to another country with the intent of murdering a man. All of this is done fairly well. And then there's just... The plot seems to just take a quick sidestep away from the camera, and it gives way to just really unfunny comedy and pointless shocks.
Did they let Michael Bay direct the last half hour of the movie? Because I think that's what happened.
Even if you're someone that loves action movies, this is just pointlessly shocking things meant to shock you instead of...
Yeah, they blow several people's heads off.
There's, like, sudden deaths that come out of nowhere to surprise you.
And then there's this terrible scene where people just keep biting each other's fingers
off. Why is that a thing?
Why was that a thing? And it just kept going on. And he bit his finger off. And then that guy bit his finger off.
How many fingers did he have left at the end?
I don't think there were any fingers.
On that hand.
And then we just all pretended like it didn't happen.
But just...
Like, Seth Rogen was just fine.
But this is what we're saying. It's... pointless action.
It was pointless gore, and it wasn't even good gore.
No, it was just shock for the sake of shock. I'm just so shocked and appalled that a finger got bitten off.
I gotta say, that was really bad fake blood, too. Yeah. I mean, it was like squirting out of hoses. Like, you could see the hoses. I was like, you spent all this money on these beautiful shots. Like, these beautiful, expansive scenery. I mean, beautiful wide shots, and then...
people getting run over by... The tank at the end. It looked like the tank was running over ketchup bottles.
It was way disgusting.
The blood just spattering everywhere.
It was disgusting.
Oh, it was so...
And not in a good way.
No.
I was not pleasantly disgusted.
The action is not the highlight of this movie.
No. No, it's not.
Stick to the comedy where you're slightly better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so what was your favorite moment from the movie? Like, your favorite scene...
My favorite scene.
Your favorite scene.
When they're just sort of starting out meeting Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, they're making the point in the film that a lot of the reason that people who go over and see him, particularly celebrities, end up liking him is because he's manipulating the media. But when you just sort of see the character of this, you know, horrible dictator... just sort of being a normal guy who's, you know, nervous to meet a celebrity and, oh, I hope he likes me and let me show you around my home. I mean, and you're not sure how much of it in the movie is legitimate and how much is him trying to play the media, but, I mean, that was a nicely done scene of trying to show, you know, even people who are just horrible human beings do have some humanity to them, and it makes you feel a little bit more for the characters and makes the movie a little bit more...
I did enjoy that it was sort of like an episode of Cribs,
yeah,
but
really
with Kim Jong-un.
There really is this whole section in the middle of, hey, check out my stuff. Look at how cool I am.
I mean, they do go to a garage, and basically he shows off, like, the Batmobile and a bunch of tanks and stuff. It was kind of great.
But it's nice seeing that they go into it thinking, oh, he might also be a human. Because it also brings home the message of, they're going there with the intent of killing a man.
Right. And,
he may be a terrible man, but you're going to kill another human.
And I did think for a minute that they were going to try to play this up like Kim Jong-un was sort of innocent in all of this. Like, he was so insulated and innocent, and they just give him a bunch of money and hookers.
Oh, especially when you first meet him. And gay margaritas. Especially when you first meet him in the film. They really seem to be playing up the fact of, oh, well, you know, his father died, and that just sort of thrust him into this role that he wasn't ready for, and he doesn't know how to really change because people expect him to be this great, grand, glorious leader. That was really well done.
I gotta say, the first, like, 5 minutes of that movie...
That was your favorite.
I think that might be my favorite.
The opening is pretty wonderful.
And any time James Franco wasn't talking.
Yes.
Really, honestly, my favorite parts of the movie were any time James Franco wasn't on screen. Like, really. Truly, it was a good movie other than that. And the last, like, 20 minutes. That was ridiculous. It could have ended.
That was pretty ridiculous.
Like, they could have just blown him apart and been done with it. But no, I mean, it was the first part of the movie, first 5 minutes of the movie, is this little girl. And she starts singing what apparently is Seth Rogen's version.
Of the North Korean national anthem.
And it is the funniest, most unexpectedly hilarious part of that movie. And it really set it up to be...
Well, it sets the tone perfectly.
It sets the tone perfectly. And it really stuck with me. And I think I'm going to go back and, like, find a YouTube clip of that and watch it on repeat.
Also, again, beautifully shot.
Beautifully shot.
Beautifully shot opening.
That 3D rendering was on point.
It was really nice.
It was really nice. Okay, worst part of the movie for you.
Oh, can I just say every scene with James Franco? No.
What was
worst
the worst
scene in the movie? Actually, has nothing to do with James Franco. The worst scene was all of the fingers getting bitten off. Not because it's overly gory, but because it's completely pointless and superfluous to the plot. This action is just—it's like they're making this interesting movie of, okay, we really want to talk about, you know, what it means to be the media, how we should interact with it. And then let's just throw in some gore, because we should have gore, right? People want gore.
See,
it's just pointless. It adds nothing to the story. It's not really brought up again. It's just this scene that they decided to throw in there because, hey, why not? It's
and now one of our two main characters doesn't have a hand.
But it adds nothing to further the story. It is a waste of your time.
Yeah.
The amount of money they spent creating that scene... How many times do you think they had to reshoot that scene? And the makeup department trying to render the fingers being bitten off. This is money that could have much, much better been spent elsewhere.
You know, I think sort of on that same vent, my least favorite scene is something that it does appear in the trailer. It's the thing with the tiger.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not necessarily the finding of the tiger. It's what they do with the probe.
Oh.
And it just becomes uncomfortable.
It becomes really uncomfortable.
It's like a late night... It's like the... base level comedy of like an American Pie like late night cable spinoff.
It is a freshman high school boys version of this is funny, right?
Right, like butt humor's funny, right?
Butts are funny.
Sticking things in butts is funny, right?
It's just the movie makes some really good jokes.
There's good humor in the movie, and that was not good humor. Butt humor is just not fun. I mean. Fart jokes are not funny. Butt humor is not funny.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy, and it's so easy, it's not funny.
There's a lot of jokes like that in this film.
I like when you know I laugh at something because it you know somebody took the time to craft a well-formed piece of humor, and that was not a piece of humor. It was a frat guy butt joke,
which is I think you know you're touching on why James Franco's character is so unlikable in this film. Is that almost every ridiculous juvenile joke related
it's
to
just
butts
so base.
Or sexuality
yeah.
is all put upon his character and just...
Okay.
It's just awful.
I'm sorry. Why are we forgetting this? What is the obsession that James Franco's character has with the Lord of the Rings.
Oh. I'm sorry, Peter Jackson. Why are your movies being brought into this? I don't know.
Peter Jackson kind of deserves this after what he did to Lord of the Ring. After what he did to The Hobbit.
We will talk about The
Hobbit. I feel like that needs to be a major, like, two-part episode because
reasons. But again, beautiful cinematography.
Beautiful cinematography.
I love how in most terrible movies, you can at least say, well, there was beautiful cinematography.
Terrible movies, but beautifully terrible.
But... there was this running joke of Lord of the Rings. And
it just kept going about James Franco.
But every time they bring it up, it's not funny. The first time they mention it, not funny. They mention it again, not funny. It comes back at the end. It's still not funny. Stop trying to make Fetch happen.
It's not going to happen, James Franco.
Oh, it's really not.
Oh, Lizzie Kaplan was in that movie. It comes full circle.
That's the joke.
Got it full circle. I'm here with you now. But no, I mean, it just this, and there were a few, like, ongoing, running, terrible things. Okay, biggest missed opportunity in the movie.
The biggest missed opportunity is an easy one for me. The ending.
Okay.
Okay, so obviously you're listening to this. There's spoilers everywhere. We're discussing the movie. Get over it. So you get to the end, a little bit before the end, James Franco finishes his interview with Kim Jong-un. Has, you know, revealed this man who's being live casted to the world, to all of his people in North Korea, and showing him as this, you know, this foible human character, has broken him down, has, you know, shown that we don't need to assassinate this man to politically kill him. We just have to show them that he's
Which
not
was
this
smart.
It was smart, but then they killed it because it turns into gore. And a chase scene, and then they kill him anyway to Katy Perry's fire.
Right, and then they did kill Kim Jong-un.
You didn't need to kill him.
He was dead. Like, he was done. The people were uprising.
It was a much stronger film if it ended with them just publicly shaming him.
And him walking away, thinking that he had killed James Franco.
That would have been a much better ending and more poignant. It makes a better point about the role of media as to how they should handle
and the
these
thing
situations.
Is, the funny thing is, they could have still done all of the rest of it. They could have still done the stupid biting of the fingers.
If you
they
really
still could have done
it,
the chase
yeah,
scene.
You can throw that
they
in
could have gotten out of there. And Kim Jong-un because at the very end of the interview, Kim Jong-un is so pissed that it went so badly that mm-hmm. he shoots James Franco. But, spoiler alert, James Franco finally got the bulletproof vest he always wanted for mm-hmm. Christmas. Thanks, Santa. And he's totally fine and stands up and gives that stupid grin of his. Oh my God.
It isn't.
Ugh. But, I'm not even kidding. He could have chased. You still could have gotten SEAL Team 6. It could have been the whole thing. You did not have to kill Kim Jong-un.
It takes away a big amount of the movie's punch.
Right.
To then kill him at the end anyway.
Right.
The whole point was that they realized they didn't have to kill
him. And the thing
is,
you could still have the ending of the diplomatic elections happening, mm-hmm. a new leader taking power, a new dawn in North Korea happening.
They just undercut their entire point
by killing him. The entire movie. Something else. So my biggest missed opportunity and what could have made this from a middling film to a good film, mm-hmm. another James Franco moment. Mm-hmm. Because I just think with his character, there were so many missed opportunities.
Oh, because he could have been better.
It could have been better. It could have been acted better, and they could have... and there were some points when it could have been directed in a different way. Mm-hmm. The grocery store scene.
Oh.
So, when they're first taken to North Korea... the propagandist is driving around and they bring up the fact that, you know, hey, I've heard that everybody in North Korea is starving. Why aren't you feeding your people? Well, take that perfect opportunity. Hey, look over there. Look at this very well-stocked grocery store.
And
with
a fat kid.
And then they talk about how, oh no, we have plenty of fat kids in North Korea because Kim Jong-un feels that fat children are a sign of prosperity. And he's sitting there with this, like, lollipop, just, like, waving at the limo, like, perfectly timed.
I'm surprised he didn't have one of those little caps
there.
With the propeller on top.
Oh, I wanted that, because then, well, but then he would have looked like the kid from Up.
Oh, true.
Oh my God, he would have looked just like the kid
from
Up.
But they set up this grocery store of, oh, no, it's proof that this is really a prosperous country.
Well, then, at one point, James Franco goes back, you know, when he's finally starting to realize that maybe Kim Jong-un isn't the sweet, adorable... you know, man-child that he first thought when they were banging hookers and drinking gay margaritas together.
Quick side note, of course, he's allowed to just walk around unescorted and unguarded.
Oh my god. Let's not even talk about the logical fallacy of Seth Rogen and James Franco just get free reign of Kim Jong-un's compound. Like, oh, yeah. Nobody's watching
them.
Nobody's
guarding.
There's no cameras. There's no microphones. You know, the most reclusive dictator in the world. Just like,
they're fine.
You guys. You guys. Like, you got this. So James Franco ends up, you know, just wandering out of the compound and going down to apparently the only city in North Korea. Like, the only neighborhood in Pyongyang.
Well, no, to be fair, they go out for dinner, him and his buddy Kim Jong-un.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, starting to question their friendship, he walks outside and sees the grocery store and walks over to inspect it.
And he realizes that it's a forced perspective.
It's a map
picture.
Painting.
Yeah, and he walks in and the produce, what there was of it was just fake. It was all, you know, like ceramic produce or whatever. And mm-hmm. he breaks it apart and there's a moment whenever there's almost actual emotion coming from Franco's character. And
almost,
he ruins it by going full-on Darth Vader, no!
As he raises his grapefruit skyward above.
Like, it just gets so bad. I was like, no, stop! You're going! Stop with it! And it just kept going. And it was it was such a missed moment of mm-hmm. actual feeling. Because that's what a good comedy does. A good comedy can still punch you with a message while being really funny. Mm-hmm. You know, good comedy should make you think.
Exactly.
You know, good comedy should sit with you in a way. The best comedians are people that tell a story. And the message of the story stays with you because you laughed the whole time. And this had the chance to do that in a scene, you know, where the full curtain is finally getting taken away. But it didn't. It just missed. And it was sad because all you had to do was just not keep doing it.
Yeah.
You were gonna do a bad thing. All you had to do was just not do that thing. Like, it was perfectly shot. I mean, it was well done. Just end it.
I think you're bringing up one of the major flaws in this film.
They didn't know when to stop.
No, they had some good parts and then they just kept undercutting them.
Yes.
Every time they had something that was funny, suddenly, usually Franco's character would immediately drag it somewhere unfunny. You have a scene like in the grocery store where he's, you know, starting to create a good moment and he has to undercut it. You have this really interesting, poignant, what could have been your end, and then you ruin it. Like, they just kept having these near good moments.
Yeah. Do you think that the reasons why people like this movie are valid? Do you think it's a good... Okay, I think it all hinges on this. Do you think that The Interview is an example of satire? And if so, is it good satire?
That's a really tough question. I don't know that I would call this satire, necessarily.
So, here's the thing. Kate and I both have extensive vocabularies. We are very good with words, but we wanted to make sure, because a lot of reviews, the positive reviews, all talked about how this was a wonderful example of satire. And I was like, I'm not sure it's satire.
I'm not sure it is.
I think it's farce.
Yes.
I think it's definitely farce, but I didn't think it was satire. So I'm not even kidding you guys. I went to the dictionary. And I looked up the word satire, and it's the use of humor, irony, exaggeration, or ridicule to expose and criticize people's stupidity or vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics and other topical issues. So I guess technically it's satire, because they do use humor to highlight a more serious issue.
They do, but it's...
But it's bad satire, because
yes.
they, like what you're saying, they undercut any moment when they could have created an impactful message, because then you can cut away to a funny. You can
yes.
cut away to the funny, but you still need to allow for the poignant to happen if you're going to consider this satire.
I don't know that it's quite smart enough to be satire. It falls just short of the mark of really exposing and critiquing.
Exactly. I think that it exposes, but then doesn't critique.
Or it gets close to exposing and critiquing, and then undercuts its message by then killing Kim Jong-un.
Or undercuts its message with a ridiculous scene where you're biting each other's fingers off. Or it undercuts its message where there was a needless guy getting his head blown off.
Exactly. It kept...
Or that one kid with the weird alien face.
That was really funny.
I swear to God, I think that kid was Hellspawn.
That was a good
He
one.
Was Hellspawn, if he was anything.
This poor child.
I don't know what created that kid, but there is something wrong with him.
But the movie, for me, didn't...
I'm gonna dream about that kid's eyes. They are way too far apart on his head to be real.
Stop critiquing this young child. But this film didn't critique enough.
No.
It kept showing issues with the entertainment industry, but not pushing enough of a question out of why do we do this? Why do we allow this? And it jokes about how people want, you know, the stupid media that Franco's character supposedly provides, but it doesn't really challenge you as to why do people want that. And it says, oh, I'm tired of producing stupid media, but they don't really delve into the why or, you know, what makes this something that's so profitable. They keep falling short of the mark of it being good satire.
And I think if it's going to be satire, then you have to decide what is it being satirical of. But, you know, you have to decide what it's satirizing. Is it satirizing infotainment? Or is it satirizing dictatorial governments, dictatorial regimes, and specifically Kim Jong-un? The problem was, I don't think the movie decided what it was satirizing.
No, it really didn't.
There were moments when it seemed like it was satirizing infotainment, and some when it was Kim Jong-un. And the problem was, again, it kept undercutting its message because it didn't quite figure it out. So... not that anybody wrote in, but if this was somebody's, you know, guilty pleasure, I don't know that we feel it's redeemed itself.
Okay. But even if you don't think it's redeemed, this is obviously just our not quite humble opinions. Do you think it's worth all of the just insane amounts of debate?
I think the debate is surrounded by the controversy.
Do you think it's worth it, though? Do you think that this is a movie that really you would have seen if not for all the controversy? Do you think the controversy was justified?
I honestly think that the controversy existed because North Korea took an interest in it. I think that this would have been a middling comedy. I think maybe I would have actually been keen to see it at some point on Netflix, which we did. I mean, it just went to Netflix. It's streaming on Netflix right now, so you too can add it to your queue and watch it on Netflix right now. You know, is it worthy of the discussion of whether or not it's satire? Is it worthy of this debate over whether or not it's the 2014 symbol of freedom of speech, which a lot of people tried to turn it into?
That was getting lauded for, you know, freedom of speech and... Oh, we can't be afraid of retaliation. You know, even the president is making a remark about this. Do you really think that it's warranted, having seen this film?
Well, the film itself, there's not enough substance to it to have merited this. It's the controversy surrounding it. Whether or not it was created by Sony, not really sure. I would be willing to bet that Sony, you know, pulled it and got the right sound bites and put it back in right at the right time and all of that. I mean, they've been very smart. I'm sure eventually they'll recoup their money, but... if they haven't already. But, I mean, you know, I think it's an okay comedy. I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. Would I watch it again? No. I mean, I think I've seen all that The Interview has to show me, and I didn't chuckle enough at the funny parts to want to watch them again.
I would agree. I don't think it's really... You know, this is a topic I had in conversation with some of my family the other day. I don't think that this is worthy of controversy the way something like Salman Rushdie's Satanic Verses is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a piece of media that's got a very clear point. It's trying to say something. It says it well. It wasn't just created to be edgy. You know, there was more point behind that controversy. It was more heartbreaking and more, you know... more of a laudable point for freedom of speech as opposed to something like this of, hey, we want to make something that's kind of funny and edgy. I know what we can do. Let's mock the idea of killing a still-sitting dictator.
Right. It almost goes from satire to just being ostentatious at the end.
Yes.
So, my mother always said that if you're going to criticize something, you should make a recommendation. You know, you should come with an action plan, so to speak. You know,
exactly.
If you're going to criticize the way things are done, you should, you know, recommend a way to do them better. So the way that we'd like to sort of round out the show is if we don't find your reasons quite valid, and I'm not sure that we're saying that we find these reasons of it being a good example of satire valid.
I have to agree with you. I don't. It doesn't pack enough of a punch. And it doesn't really have a lot of rewatchability. You're not going to get a lot out of it watching it a second time.
So I don't know that we have fallen in love with the interview. I have to say, I think we watched it with fresh eyes, and I think we think a lot better about it than I believe we went into it thinking we would.
Yes, think a lot better. It's really... I would say
I would recommend a once-over. It's free on Netflix. It's streamed on Netflix. You know, have some wine. You're going to need it.
I would say if it's a movie you're interested about the hype, you want to see, it's worth seeing once.
It's worth the one-time viewing.
But it's not something that I would recommend seeing over and over again. I don't think it's worthy of being, you know, taught in media classes.
But this is a multimedia show, so a couple of different forms of media where this same kind of plot line has been used, but done way better. I think if you want to watch another movie where you sort of get the revenge porn of, killing the dictatorial leader, Inglourious Basterds.
Yes.
Where they go off and kill Hitler. Is an incredible example of revenge porn in cinema where...
Way better gore.
Way better film.
Much funnier.
If you want to watch good gore, Quentin Tarantino will do it with just the right amount of camp.
And it's much more comedic.
Yeah, it's this revenge... it's this phenomenal revenge fantasy set during World War II where, you know, this team of guys centered around Brad Pitt's character... go off and sort of win the war against the Nazis. You like how I said that? The Nazis. How about we do that a few more times?
The Nazis.
But I would say if you want to see sort of that revenge fantasy acted out, and you want to see, you know, the bad guy get it, I would think that's a better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
A funnier version, if you want to take it into a funny place. Now I know that we don't do a lot of TV here, but the episode "Let's Go Kill Hitler" from Doctor Who. First of all, River Song in that particular episode is genius. It's divine. But they do it. They do the farce of it in a much better way. It's a much cleaner satire, and a much cleaner comedy. And I think it's better done.
Or if you just want to, you know, look at something that discusses the struggles with power and leadership. I mean, you could even go something as basic as reading Animal Farm, and you're still going to get the basic message of, hey, dictatorship is bad.
One of us. One of us.
I mean, it's not a new concept. The story's been done
before. Of course, Animal
Farm
discusses communism, so that would be more...
Exactly. You know, it's a little bit more on key.
Yep.
You've got the communism, you've got... But this... This movie just falls.
Yeah, it falls short of being good. And the problem is, it could have been.
Well, and even if
And I think that's what frustrates me about this movie, is that it could have been good.
It could have been great.
Yeah.
You want to start talking about, like, even censorship. Way more interesting story. Read about the Satanic Verses with Salman Rushdie. Read about the controversy about publishing the poem Howl by Allen Ginsberg. At least that's controversy over something... a little more worthy of being controversial about.
All right, folks, so that is your first episode of Because Reasons, a multimedia review podcast where we take your guilty pleasures and put them on trial and see whether or not your reasons are valid. And in this case, I'm sorry, guys, for anybody that loved the interview, your reasons are invalid.
Sorry, better luck next time.
But until next time, this is Don and Kate signing off saying, watch better movies. Or don't.
And then let us watch them for you.
Yes. Hey everyone, it's Don. With a quick edit here at the end of the episode, we realized after we finished recording that we forgot to tell you how you can keep up with us. So I wanted to give you guys a quick note. if you are on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/becausereasonspodcast. And keep up with us there. You can like the page, share the page, share the posts with the links to our show and all of that with all of your Facebook friends. If you're on Twitter, we tweet at ReasonsCast. So far, if you'd like to send us your submission for your own guilty pleasure, be it book or movie or whatever, just please feel free to either tweet us or send us a message through Facebook. Hopefully by the time the next few episodes get put out to you, we will have the website and the email address all set up. So for now, just go ahead and check us out on the Facebook and the Twitter and get in touch and tell everybody about Because Reasons Podcast. And we'll see you guys again in 2 weeks.